You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on
a
CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
Oh, no. I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Last Tuesday night, Australians got to relive some of their childhood and even adolescence with the return of Hey Hey It's Saturday to free-to-air TV. Hey Hey was Australia's longest-running variety TV show, with a 28-year season which, in its infancy, was a Saturday morning three-hour kids' TV show. In time, the show grew to become very popular with all ages, kids and adults alike, as what went over the kids' heads in the front row was not missed by the mums and dads sitting on the couch behind them. Hey Hey eventually moved to a nighttime spot, where it lived for well over a decade until its timely demise in 1999, when its 28-year run finally came to an end. Not only was it the end of a TV show most, if not all, Australians grew up with, it was virtually the end of live variety TV in Australia. Yes, variety lived on, but not in the form of live television. Post-Hey Hey variety was in the form of scripted and tightly edited television, the complete opposite of the unscripted, unrehearsed live TV of the pre-2000 era. So what has Hey Hey It's Saturday got to do with technology? Well, last Tuesday night, when the three-hour, 10-year reunion special aired, social networking added a whole new dimension to live television, thanks to Twitter, the short messaging social network. Australians came together for 3 hours to interact with the show, pushing the #HeyHey tag to number one globally for the 3 hours of the show, and it remained in the top 10 for nearly 24 hours after that. Mainstream media reported, social media might not have been around when Australia got its first taste of Hey Hey It's Saturday, but it didn't stop the show's fans taking to Twitter and Facebook like a plucker duck to water. Tens of thousands of tweets were posted as Daryl Summers and friends took to the air for part one of their reunion special, with comments from viewers still flooding in the morning after at a rate of around one every 5 seconds. So why was Hey Hey so strong on Twitter? Well, in a recent report by Nielsen Online, Twitter continues to grow in popularity and importance in both the consumer and corporate worlds. No longer just a platform for friends to stay connected in real time, it has evolved into an important component of brand marketing. Unique visitors to Twitter increased 1,382% year over year, from 475,000 unique visitors in February 2008 to 7 million in February 2009, making it the fastest growing site in the member communities category for the month. Facebook followed, growing 228%, but Twitterers, also known as tweeters, are not primarily teens or college students as you might expect. In fact, in February, the largest age group on Twitter was the 35 to 49-year-olds, with nearly 3 million unique visitors, comprising almost 42% of the site's audience. Hey Hey It's Saturday is scheduled for its final reunion show on October the 7th. Let's see if the law of averages stand true and the Hey Hey hash will again soar to the top of Twitter's trending topics. My bet is it will be bigger and better than the previous, as Australians relive the time when things weren't so stressful and life was just a little bit easier. For the rest of the world wondering what on earth the hash Hey Hey tag was, it's a little bit of yesteryear for us Aussies. It'll go away in time, but then again, maybe it's here to stay.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam looks at Google's side wiki, Microsoft to give free antivirus software to the masses, a bank to roll out free Wi-Fi. I wonder which bank it could be. And a warning today of the new online threat set to be a real challenge for authorities. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, hackers cash in on the Samoan disaster. The Nationals lash out at the federal government over a lack of NBN planning. AFACT withdraws another allegation against iiNet. And 10 years after it last went to air, Hey Hey It's Saturday ranks in Twitter's top 10 trending topics. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Unscrupulous cyber criminals are cashing in on the Samoan disaster by setting up websites infected with viruses and malware. Some searches for news about the devastating earthquake and tsunami last week directed people to a hijacked website, which ultimately led to an infected site with a Chinese IP address. According to The Age Tech last week, this site warned people that their computer was at risk and offered to install security software, which was in itself a virus. Similar strategies were used by hackers after sudden events caused huge amounts of internet traffic. People searching for news sites and blogs after the deaths of Michael Jackson and Patrick Swayze were targeted by hackers using similar strategies. According to Channel News, search engine optimization, or SEO, poisoning is the current trend for directing users to rogue antivirus software. These attacks are designed to artificially create high search engine rankings for sites which exploit major news topics in an effort to get traffic to sites which are infected with malware. Security company F-Secure also warned that social networking site Twitter could trap unwary web surfers through its use of short, indecipherable web addresses. Screenshots of the malicious Google results and the rogue antivirus tweets can be found on F-Secure's blog, which is at www.f-secure.com/weblog. The New South Wales National Party has hit out at the federal government over a lack of plans for the $43 billion national broadband network. New South Wales National Senator Fiona Nash said last week that if the NBN was to provide better connections to underserved areas, there was no excuse for not starting the build in regional Australia. Senator Nash pointed out that the details like what technology will be used, where it will be used and how it will be rolled out are still unknown, and that Senator Conroy has been unable to provide any kind of geographic map of where that last 10% is going to be. Senator Nash is seeking a commitment that the underserved Australians living in regional Australia will be the first ones to get connected to the NBN. Senator Nash said, "There is this huge inequity between the services that are provided in the cities and those that are served in the regions, so the regions would have to be covered first, and that means actual connections to homes and businesses." No response was forthcoming from Senator Conroy on his official website last week. The Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, AFACT, has dropped one of the primary claims in its allegations against Perth-based internet service provider iiNet. While AFACT was alleging that iiNet had failed to prevent its customers from illegally downloading copyright movies, the decision for AFACT to withdraw the allegations comes less than 1 week before federal court hearings are due to commence. iiNet said last week that the allegations were unfounded and demonstrated a complete lack of knowledge of internet technology and operations. Earlier allegations against iiNet were also withdrawn by AFACT in May this year, after the film studios said that iiNet had been intentionally interfering or converting the copyright holders' films. iiNet was subsequently awarded legal costs and said that it will be seeking costs related to this latest dropped claim. An AFACT spokesperson told IT News that it was a subsidiary part of the studio's case, and that AFACT was so confident in the main part, which has always been the authorisation claim, that AFACT doesn't feel it needs the subsidiary part. The case will be heard on Tuesday this week before Justice Dennis Cowdroy. And much to the consternation of international Twitterers, the brief return of long-running TV variety show Hey Hey It's Saturday caused some confusion as it ranked in the top 10 trending topics last week. The Age Tech reported that tens of thousands of tweets were posted as Daryl Summers and friends took to the air for part one of a reunion special, with comments from viewers still flooding Twitter a day later at the rate of about one every 5 seconds. Hey Hey's Facebook page also attracted considerable interest, with friends just shy of 231,000. A spokeswoman for the Nine Network described the real-time Twitter feed as extraordinary. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Don't kick the baby home, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, our post-250th show. Yeah, we've been doing this for some time now.
Begs the question, if you want a touch screen, you won't be able to have one of these on it?
I can't give you that information over the phone.
I need my fix of current Tech Talk Radio.
Zombies. Do you know what a zombie is?
Yes, I do.
What's a zombie?
That's the same stuff I used to listen to on my Walkman when I was young. You know what a Walkman is?
No.
Never heard of a Walkman? No.
Sorry, Sony.
you guys need to get out more. You need to go on holidays so you understand what Skype does.
No, I still haven't played with Snow Leopard.
No, haven't you?
Leaving
no?
That, leaving that for a week.
But you might use it for a tactile feedback.
You wouldn't know anything about those mystery photo messages I get sometimes, would you?
Dad's a mystery person.
Well, he is.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Very good evening, everybody. One and all, welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across from me today is a very capable panel. In fact, the regular panellists are here this evening from left to right. Are we on the TV at the moment?
We are.
We are? Good. That was JD you just heard from there. Justin is in this evening in the centre camera position, if that's such a word, is the good doctor.
Present. Hello.
And in the gingham T-shirt down the end there is Rimmer. I mean, is...
Thank you very much.
You haven't got the H in your forehead, no. But anyway. Is Graham Callaghan. Hello, Graham. Sorry, I didn't mean that. It just reminded me of Red Dwarf, because tonight's a very special night of British comedy type sort of
it is,
thing,
yes.
Isn't it? So, does everybody know what sort of special night it is? And, Graham, you've got some other audio on that machine at the moment.
Sorry.
it's an anniversary of some very special people that are probably near and dear to us and also have probably single-handedly given the tech world so many cliches and one-liners, it's not funny. Do you know who I'm talking about? You're not allowed to answer, says he, pointing at Graham.
I think there's a bit of a conspiracy going on here. Andrew and Graham quite clearly know something that we don't, JD. What's happened this week? What's happened today?
You want to roll it, Graham? They can't get us. 40 years ago today.
Monty Python, the Flying Circus.
Do you remember now?
40 years ago today.
40 years ago today.
Fantastic. But why is Graham playing John Philip Sousa? But now I know.
No, 40 years ago today, the Python boys hit the airwaves and British television.
First episode went to air. Yep.
Spruiking all sorts of wonderful things, and I think the world has never looked back, especially the tech world and spam. Here we go. There we go.
That's
you've
the one.
Just got to roll up in at the end, don't you?
Monty Python, as Warlock says in the chat room. Yeah. Come and chat to us, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
What are your fond memories, apart from the spam, you know, the lumberjacks and spam and all that, the Vikings? You remember any of your other early versions, like all the films and things like that that have come out?
The Dead Parrot sketch.
Yeah. Have you got a favourite? That's a really hard question, isn't it?
When Mr. Gumby is my favourite. The Mr. Gumby sketches.
Yeah.
They're tremendous. They're all really good.
The machine that goes bing.
Yeah. The movies are all good.
Yep. It was very close to the bone, that movie, wasn't it? Very real to life. I must admit, some of the great things that come back to me is, you know, some of the John Cleese sketches of, you know, defending self-defense against fruit. Do you
Ministry
remember
of Silly Walks.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the right room for an argument. Do you remember that?
Is this the room for an argument? Yes.
Oh, you want abuse? That's two doors down or whatever it was. Oh, absolutely sensational. So, it's a bit of a landmark for us, really, isn't it? 40
it
years,
is.
And
particularly
the guys are all still with us.
For tech heads like us, it's the basis of a lot of the geek techno geek mythology goes back to those sorts of references. There's a lot, the sort of person that wears a t-shirt that says "There's no place like 127.0.0.1" is the same sort of person who would know the words to the parrot sketch all the way through. It's part of the timeline.
It personifies technology to a lot of extent, doesn't it?
And I think it's just an accident of history that it's been prominent at the same time as those who created the technology revolution were growing up. So
one of the things that I really thought was clever about the Python guys was that there was meaning in a lot of their sketches. There was like history was built into a lot of their sketches. Mm. You learnt when I say learnt, they used. The humour was based around
historical figures and points in time.
Yeah. And I thought, we don't have that in today's modern humour.
And yet
there's
very little contemporary 1960s or 1969, late 60s, early 70s references in there. So a lot of the sketches you can still play today and get the same meaning out of it. Or
the first
even,
time you would have heard it, yeah.
Yeah.
You'd still get a laugh out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, because the way it was all constructed was not sort of making fun of the current Prime Minister or something like that. The themes were a lot more general, a lot more universal.
You wonder what they would make of today's, you know, modern high-tech technology from satellite communication, internet, email and stuff like that. You know.
Well, they would make something very funny of it is what these guys would do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And some of them are still active. I mean, John Cleese has a regular...
He's very active on Twitter.
And he had a video podcast that he contributes to on a regular basis as well. Yeah. And
I actually follow John Cleese on Twitter. I'm just trying to find it. So.
Yeah. And I'm sure many of the others do.
Yeah, but you look
those
at...
Those that are still with us, of course.
And they've all gone on to bigger and better things, really. You look at Michael Palin stuff.
Mm, well, traveled exactly. The world several yes. times over.
Oh, absolutely. And... There was another thing he used to have too, and I can't think of what it was, but yeah, the post-Python type sort of era, they all sort of did their, here you go, this is what John Cleese is tweeting right now as we speak, special edition world t-shirt of Norway. There you go, the special edition world tour of Norway t-shirt now available tonight, and then he's got a reference to Lilyhammer, love Cleese. Minion 7.
Who should we follow if we want to follow John Cleese? What's the username, Andrew, on Twitter?
Funnily enough, John Cleese.
So just at John Cleese, we're doing search for?
At John Cleese, yeah. no space search, just John Cleese. So location, London, the bio says, yes, I am still indeed alive, contrary to rumour, and I am making video podcasts. As you said there, Dr. And he's doing well. He's got 250,000 followers. 251,241 to be precise.
That's pretty good. I think Graham hit it on the head when he said that it's the generation that grew up with Python is like the generation that's sort of been at the forefront of the technology revolution. We've seen the evolution of computers as a bit of a novelty item in the home through to just an essential part of our life today.
Yeah, and of course everybody who uses email makes reference every day to a Monty Python sketch.
They do?
Unknowingly. Unknowingly. Yep.
Yeah, a lot of them without realising. Yeah, back to that spam sketch.
You haven't got it handy, have you?
Yeah.
It says, oh, here we go. If you can drag it up into... I'll push the fader up, so... Here we go.
Morning! What you got, then? Well, there's egg and bacon, egg, sausage and bacon, egg and spam, egg, bacon and spam, egg, bacon, sausage and spam... Spam, bacon, sausage and spam. Spam, egg, spam, spam, bacon and spam. Spam, 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 egg and spam. Spam, 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 spam. Baked beans, spam, spam, spam and spam. Oh, lobster thermidor, crevettes with mayonnaise sauce, garnished with truffle pate brandy and a fried egg on top and spam. Have you got anything without spam in it? Well, spam, egg, sausage and spam. It's not got much spam in it. I don't want any spam.
Why can't you have egg, bacon, spam and sausage?
That's got spam in it.
Not as much as spam, egg, sausage and spam.
Look, could I have egg, bacon, spam and sausage without the spam? What do you mean? I don't like spam.
Spam, 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 spam.
Dear, I love your spam. I love it. I'm having spam, 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 baked beans, spam, spam, and spam.
Baked beans are off.
We can have spam instead.
You mean spam, 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 spam.
Honey bun, my lower intestine is full of spam, egg, spam, bacon, spam, 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 spam.
Shut!
My nipples.
Shut!
Spam!
That's getting a bit obscure then.
It does. But that's it, isn't it? That personifies what spam is all about. Spam, spam. Yep. And we get it like that, don't we? It just comes
exactly
in.
Exactly right.
It thousands just... of thousands of unwanted.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
Good I should you... explain the sketch is set in the BBC cafe, and obviously the extras from some Viking program are sitting around in their Viking uniforms chanting spam, 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 spam. So.
What do you think?
Very silly.
What do you think of Fawlty Towers just as a spin off? Would you think that was. you know, on par, comparable, or a completely different sort of...
No, Fawlty Towers, absolute classic, of
it
course.
It is.
John Cleese and Connie Booth, yeah.
It is. It is. No, I'm just interested. Some people think that the Python boys were very much Python, and that was it, and then they all did their breakaway things. But, yes, Python... John Cleese, when he did Fawlty Towers, 11 eps. Mm. It was just absolute priceless television, so they don't make it like that anymore.
No.
The chat room's gone crazy here. People just want to listen to Monty Python all night. They don't want us to talk about technology, Andrew.
Or maybe we should start a Monty Python show. Yeah.
Maybe we could, a Monty Python podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's a ton of it on YouTube, so the show, when we're all finished, go and hit YouTube, do a bit of a search.
Absolutely.
You'll find some classic stuff.
Did you notice that the Python boys have actually put a lot of stuff up on YouTube, and they preface it on the Monty Python channel by saying, we put this stuff here so you stop nicking it.
Yes.
So anyway, very humorous. All right, there you go. That's one major milestone in history, from both classic television through to modern day.
And not directly technology, but very close to the techno geek's heart.
Oh, absolutely. And it also, I saw Spamalot. Do you remember Spamalot? It was on at the theatre here in Melbourne.
It was a musical based on the... Yeah, I didn't see it.
Funny. Oh, it was very funny. I remember it as I was listening to the Python stuff tonight. I said, oh, yeah, it was good where they start throwing sheep over walls and stuff like that. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk briefly... Whilst we're on the subject of television, Hey, It's Saturday went to air here in Australia on
a Wednesday.
Wednesday. Now, yeah. Anyone else outside the world of Hey, It's Saturday or outside of Australia would probably be wondering, what is a program called Hey, It's Saturday doing on a night other than a Saturday night? Well,
and why is it rating in the top 10 trending topics on Twitter?
Well, that was very funny.
On the day of a tsunami and an earthquake. And
exactly, yeah.
I forgot about that. Yes, it was, wasn't it? It was absolute phenomenal. Just for those of you listening to us out overseas and have no idea what we're talking about, Hey, It's Saturday was a variety program which lasted 28 years. I think it had one break in there for a bit, but it started off as a kids' program on a Saturday morning for 3 hours, and as it evolved, it moved into a two and a half hour Saturday night slot in its 28 years, about halfway through, I think.
And it's interesting the way it did that, because the same audience, the same people that watched it as kids when it was on in the Saturday morning, watched it as young adults before they went out on a Saturday night.
Can I draw a parallel to Python here? In a lot of respects, the formula that they started off with, which became so popular, is what they stuck with on the way through, which is what a lot of the Python boys did, I think.
Mm.
That sort of, as they went off and did their own sort of special projects, I think that humour sort of stuck. And Hey Hey went to air on Tuesday night, and it rated...
pretty well.
Just slightly short of what the AFL Grand Final rates. It was about 3.1, I think. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but someone can correct me if I'm wrong. But
just over 2.1 million
just
viewers.
Just over 2.1, was it? Yeah, it might have been the Grand Finals, about 3 or something.
Channel 9 would probably be happy with that.
Well, yes, I think they were. As Dr. Ron alluded to in the opening this evening, they were a bit surprised. I must admit, I was a bit surprised too, because I was watching it with the laptop on the desk, on the table in the living room.
Oh, yeah.
And my Twitterfall couldn't keep up. I had to up the ante on Twitterfall to sort of read all the tweets that were coming through. And can I say that I'd say 99% of the comments were all, pro, hey, isn't it great to have them back? It's a bit like a lost relative finally come home, and they hadn't really changed a bit. And there was the odd American or non-Australian person that popped up. I think a few Americans, just judging by the tone of their tweets, wondering what on earth hash Hey Hey was. So social networking, it's moved into a genre which obviously Hey Hey didn't have back then. Back when it was on air 10 years ago, no such thing as Twitter, probably no such thing as Facebook. The internet was probably just in its infancy.
There's a new way of watching television that we're seeing emerge.
Yes, this is my point.
This is very point in time, and that is watching television and having a laptop
computer. With it.
Yeah, or a computer beside you, or a netbook, and having Twitter fall or something like that, and watching all the comments, and there's a social commentary that's happening while the program's going to air.
Yep, absolutely. I find it quite almost boring these days to watch a TV show, to just sit and do nothing else but watch the TV show. We're so used to having other information. You might be chatting about it. You might be Twittering about it. You might be reading the webpage about the show while you're watching the show. We're getting very used to doing other interactions while the TV's on.
The big ones that it's happening for, obviously, are Australian Idol. Australian Idol.
No, what's that?
Oh, it's a stupid talent show thing where they get all the people on and they sing and they make a horrible noise.
A bit like Red Faces, but a bit sort of overacted.
But they take it seriously. Yeah.
What's the fun in that?
there isn't any.
Is that the thing Kyle Sandilands was involved in?
He was supposed to be.
The shock jock who decided anymore. To shock too much.
Not anymore, he shocked too much. Other like so-called reality television type shows like MasterChef, programs like that, and things like this, like Hey Hey, and then suddenly you'll see when this program is on, it becomes a trending topic, and there are hundreds of thousands of people tweeting about it as they're watching it.
But it's interesting because those other shows, like Idol, for example, are all about convergence. So they promote SMSing and going to the website and all these other things. Whereas, as you said before, Hey Hey wasn't around when these things existed. So it'd be interesting to see if it does progress, whether it it takes up the ante and gets a big Twitter following every week and has a web page and has an SMS interaction take place, maybe part of Red Faces.
Nielsen surveys, the people who do the TV and radio ratings, did a recent survey about Twitter users and found that the average demographic, or for, should I say the peak in the demographic for Twitterers, was in the 30s to 40s, and that would be exactly the target market for Hey Hey It's Saturday that was on Wednesday night. So it was a bit like, as I think one person said, a pluck a duck to water. Everyone just jumped on the bandwagon and started tweeting about it, and their Facebook went through the roof. So, as you say, Dr. Ron, it's probably the way that we're going to start watching television, isn't it? With a laptop on our you know, the coffee table and kicking back, watching it on the big screen and interacting with it. So,
and people don't pull any punches either when they're making their social commentary on Twitter.
No, they don't.
They see something they don't like. It's
just some pretty harsh comments there at times.
That's what I love about short messaging. You can't mince your words. You've got to be direct and to the point.
Yep. And people are, let me tell you, they are very direct. And it's obviously not moderated in any way. So it's sort of buyer beware or follow at your own risk if you're offended by coarse language or the incisive comments that you're likely to see there, then maybe don't follow it. But yeah, Twitterfall is an ideal platform for watching Twitter because the message is just dynamically fall down the screen.
It's interesting. Channel 9 were partly aware of what was going on. They certainly had an email address that you could email, and they were receiving those live on air.
They did, and they did. Daryl did actually talk about, and they supered up the hashtag.
Yeah, they did. They did talk a lot about the hashtag. That's right. And what's interesting is Channel 9 didn't stream the show on the internet.
No, but everyone else did.
But other people did. So it was watched overseas, and that was acknowledged on the show. And they even had interviews with people overseas watching it on the illegal stream.
They did indeed.
So
that's what expats are all about, isn't
it? That's right.
Then when it came, because I didn't get to watch it, I was doing some other things that night, unfortunately. And I went to watch.
I'll lend you my PVR.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
Now that's a gripe though,
what?
Because on their electronic program guide,
yes,
they didn't call it Hey Hey It's Saturday. So
what did they call it?
They called it Premiere Super Special or something.
Oh, you mean on Channel 9? Yes, they did. I saw that.
Yeah.
Except for Saturday night, they did call it something on their electronic program guide, and then it wasn't on.
But you wouldn't want to record Hey Hey It's Saturday. And if for anyone with 28 years' experience with Hey Hey It's Saturday, you would know why you wouldn't want to trust your PVR to a electronic program.
Hours and hours.
Well, it did go over by half an hour. It turned into a three-hour show.
Yeah, well, I missed the start of it because I'd done a search, you know, a few days before for Hey Hey Saturday as the title, and I thought, oh, it's not on this week, must be on next week, and I hadn't found the title, and then someone said it's starting, so I hit record.
Do you reckon?
But then
they did that deliberately, and if so, why?
No, I think it was just stupidity and carelessness that put the title of the show in the title of the EPG so people can find it and record it, and it's basic stuff.
But the EPGs are pretty poor anyway. I mean, we're moving off subject.
The EPG is absolutely woeful. You're absolutely right.
There's no consistency around subjects. So if you've got a series, it varies. Because I record quite a bit of stuff for the kids at home, as I think a lot of people probably do. And so you're trying to get the episode name of a series, and it is either not there or it's in the description or...
Yep.
Yeah, it's just inconsistent across all the channels.
And they don't update the times. So when a program runs over time, it's a simple thing for a TV station to do to update the finish time, and your PVR will then keep recording even though it's running over as long as they update the EPG. But Channel 9 won't do this.
Well, none of them will do that.
None of them will do it, no. I mean, every other TV station in the world will do it, but a TV station in Australia think that that's too hard.
If you want to
lift your game, Channel 9, and everybody
I think
else.
We need a segment on our Tech Talk Radio called What Cheeses Me Off. Now, what do you reckon about that? We could run it each week. Sorry, Dr. Ron, I jumped in there.
No, I was just going to tell everybody that Wednesday this week is going to be the second of the two reunion specials. So Wednesday, 7th of October, apparently.
Yes, we have another one coming up very shortly.
7:30 p.m., the second Hey Hate Saturday reunion special. If you don't know what on earth we're talking about, you're listening overseas, you've never seen Hey Hate Saturday, you're going to have a look on Wiki, and you'll also be able to find it to watch somewhere, I'm certain, on YouTube or...
Oh, absolutely.
Or some, yes, other less than savoury download site. But have a look. It's very funny. It's funny stuff.
All right. Now, should we go to Cairo before we hit the rundown?
Yeah, let's go.
Nearly halfway through a show. I said to you tonight we'd hardly touch any of this.
This is like a bit like Hey Hey in that way, isn't it?
Is.
We would run half an hour over every week if we didn't have another program on after it.
Just so everybody knows, I go to a lot of effort to do a rundown each week. And do you think we go anywhere near half of it?
No. Tony says, "Hi guys, I was hoping you could help. Nero was giving me grief.
You see what you've started, Graham?
Yeah, grief last night. Not the the software, not the Emperor," says Tony. Yep, I remember you mentioned on Tech Talk last week or the week before some free burning software.
Okay, step one, click on the start Nero. Button, go to control panel, add remove programs, and Nero. Uninstall Nero. Step two, go to the web, go to... or Google the name InfraRecorder, I-N-F-R-A recorder, and download that. It's free. It's open source. It's really good. And guess what? What it does
it works.
Is it just burns CDs and DVDs.
It's very easy just... to use. Very easy to install, and it
That's
works.
That's right. It doesn't have all this other nonsense bundled in with it. So...
I must admit, I used Nero on a work computer last week, which I don't normally use that computer.
Right.
And it had a fairly recent version of Nero installed on it, and it took me ages to just... It's like, I just want to add some files to a project and burn them to a disk. And it was very difficult to navigate through all the buttons and menus and panels. This is way too difficult for what it's supposed to be.
Yep, no... Uninstall it, install InfraRecorder, and you'll be a lot happier.
And I've on your say-so, Graham, I did it on my laptop, and I did it on my work machine. Just deliberately got rid of the proprietary stuff I had in there.
There you go.
I haven't looked back. It's been terrific. It gives you four options or six options when you boot it. Nice pictures. Click the one you want, and away you go.
And, of course, never forget that current versions of Windows, even Windows XP, had CD burning abilities built into it.
Warlock in our chat room says that he just uses Windows 7.
And exactly. In Windows 7, it's
will
really
it do a
quite
DVD?
Advanced.
I haven't tried that
Windows 7
yet.
Will do a DVD. It will do, and it will burn ISOs of CDs or DVDs.
An ISO? What's an ISO, Graham?
An ISO is an image file of a CD or a DVD.
In the television industry, it's called an isolated camera feed, so it's not that.
No, it's
the,
not that no. at all. No, okay. no. no.
So it's an ISO, it's a CD image of a
So it's everything you need to make the actual CD all rolled into one file.
Let's use a real world example. If like our good selves, if you download say Windows 7 off the Microsoft site, it comes in an ISO, doesn't it?
That's right. And Microsoft are moving to doing a lot of their software, all of their software distribution that way for their open licensing. So instead of buying a media kit now,
so an ISO device is going to be important, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, for this,
and that's
saying.
Why it's built into the operating system. So you can, you know, if you're running a small business, you can go and buy five copies of Office 2007 in an open license agreement, and they'll give you a license key to install it and a link to download the ISO, and then you burn your own media CD to install it from.
And but it of course, well. If you've got an ISO file, you don't need to burn a CD or a DVD at all. You just mount it on your desktop and run it. Direct.
Well, you could do that if
how,
you were.
How does a Mac... Does a Mac know what an ISO is? Being
Macs yeah. know ISO is even better than Windows does.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because
oh,
on a Mac you can do... It, build into the operating system, the tricks that Justin's talking about. Where you don't even need to burn it. You can just mount it as if it was a real CD.
Okay. Hey, that's really cool, isn't it?
Andy B says, "Hi, studio dudes. Thanks for my winning the tablet last week."
Oh, hey.
Just to the... Much to the chagrin of everybody else in the chat room there. I think he's getting a fair bit of grief from... you're welcome, Andy.
I have to say, I wanted that tablet
too.
Yeah,
buy one. They're cheap. They're $100.
He's a happy camper, but he's made a lot of enemies, I think, now, Andy, but that's all right.
Welcome. We'll have to put the thumb screws on Wacom. What do they call them?
Wacom. Yes.
And see if they'll give us another one.
We might have to be nice
Christmas
about their
presents
name,
or something.
Yeah.
Joe says, "You're the best Australian IT program that I have listened to so far."
Thanks Joe. Checks in the mail.
Checks in the mail. Keep up the good work. I can say that as I have been listening to Triple R's Bite Into It for several years now. Now, Triple R's Bite Into It's an excellent program, and I listen to that regularly.
Yeah,
funny guys there. We listen to other tech shows as well. The only question I have is that I use Juice Podcast Receiver 2.2. I like everything that this And like everything, I should say, this appears to be happening constantly in recent months rather than intermittently as occurred in the past. When I try to download your podcast, it either takes a while for the shows to appear compared to the other podcasts that I download, whether they are in Oz or overseas, or nothing appears, as has done this weekend. I do recall in one of your previous programs that you did change US servers, but this has not really changed the delays in juice. Appreciate any feedback when you have a chance. Thanks from Joe.
All right. Well, the podcasts live in the United States on a US server, but the RSS feed or the podcast feed itself lives here in Australia, in particular in Melbourne. So there is no reason, because it gets updated pretty much within 12 hours of now from the show going to air. So unless something untoward happens, then, yeah, theoretically it's uploaded and should be online pretty well instantly. The other option, of course, is you can come to the Tech Talk Radio website and click the download latest program option if for some strange reason your podcasting is not doing what it should be. So we're using Feed for All to generate the podcast. Whether there's an issue there or not, I don't know, but we'll look into it and see if we can work out if there's anything
else.
Yeah,
disturbing to hear that there's something not quite working there.
So I use Juice as well, Joe, and it seems to work all right for me usually, but as Andrew said, yeah, there's direct links to the show as well. You can download it manually if you can't wait or there's a problem with your podcatcher. And last piece of correspondence for this week from... Yeah, I know, it's a full...
We have to go to break after this. We haven't even had the rundown.
A full mailbag. Levi says, hi, I am Levi. I'm 12 years old. I live in the US in Ohio.
Hello, Levi.
I love your shows, but I never get to watch them live. You have a thing that others don't, humour, and I like that. I, being a 12-year-old, I have a company called L. Luke NRG Tech, NRG Tech, or LNT. What I do mostly is media, web, and program coding. For me, being a 12-year-old, I think I'm very smart. We think you are too, Levi. Thanks for the message. It's good to hear that 12 years old and you find us humorous and amusing and hopefully informative as well.
That's absolutely. If you've got something to throw at us, either good, bad, indifferent, or otherwise, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. And hopefully we'll read you out on air. Or come along in the chat room as we're doing there right now. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio, and we're now going to start the rundown.
45 minutes into the program, we need to
and
look
that's
at our
the
notes.
Show. That's,
absolutely. Yeah, the mainstream presses, which I must admit, when I came across this morning, I said, you've got to be kidding. The company, otherwise known as Apple in the United States, is having a go at the company, the Australian company called Woolworths, and they're having a go at them over the logo, stating that the logo, the Woolies, you ever seen the new Woolies peeled apple logo that's on the side of all those trucks that nearly run you off the road?
Yeah, it's a bit of a green, funny-shaped W thing with a, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bit like apple peel. Looks nothing like the apple's apple, but it's a bit of an apple peely type sort of look. Well, that's my opinion. Anyway, it's not Apple's opinion, and they're having a bit of a go. Now, one of the reasons, or what they're going to do, is they're going to mount a legal challenge to prevent Woolworths from using the logo, arguing that it's too close to Apple's own. Apple will have to convince IP Australia, the federal government agency that governs trademarks, to knock back Woolworths' application, which was filed in August last year. Now, I've just been through a trademarking process, and anyone who's been through a trademarking process knows how long that takes. And
is the fact that they've got a trademark, is that like, well, there will not be any case to answer because the trademark was successfully and properly registered?
Well, I'm not an IP lawyer. Don't ask me questions like that. What I can say...
Why not? You should know. Yeah, go on.
What I can say is when you apply for a trademark, it asks you what categories you want the trademark in.
Yep.
Now, say, for example, take apple, for example. Apple is a noun. It's a piece of fruit on a tree. You can't trademark the word apple. You just can't do that because...
Well, Apple Records tried doing that, didn't they?
That's right. Because everyone uses apple in a fair use policy. Like, come to my fruit shop, I sell apples. Can you imagine being taken to the cleaners because you say that?
So Apple is part of their trademarked logo.
So what Apple have trademarked is the logo.
Yep.
Not the word, but the logo.
Yep.
They might have Apple Computers Inc. trademarked as a group of words.
But that's their company name, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's,
but you can't trademark just the word apple.
Yep.
It's like me trademarking
but
the
isn't
word.
But doesn't the trademark also apply just to a particular field, doesn't
Correct.
It?
Correct.
It applies to
yes.
computers and technology gadgets and
yes.
software and hardware.
And that's right. And when you fill out your trademark application form, when you go to IP Australia, which is a government-based thing, they'll ask you what fields you want to apply your trademark in. And there's about 60 fields there, I think, from recollection. Mine's 42, which is web development and television production and radio and stuff like that. Now, I think what Apple has got their knickers in a knot about is the fact that Woolworths have ticked the box that says electronic merchandise, which is a fairly broad sort of topic.
Yeah, but which Woolworths sell? A trading?
Correct.
Yep.
So it's now going to come down to litigation. There's going to be a lot of lawyers that are going to get fairly rich, I would imagine, in the next few months as this goes through courts to see who gets what.
So I would have thought that there wouldn't be a problem unless Apple want to open a supermarket or Woolworths decide
to... Apple's been there before, so it'll be kind of interesting to know where this is coming from because most of the Apple zealots like myself know that Apple Computer got sued by Apple Records for using the term Apple. How dare they? And for those of you that know, the main beep that the original Macintosh had...
Beep? You mean that ka-chung when it starts up?
Yeah. Was called So Sue Me.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
For that very reason. And so...
.wav or .... Yeah, what do you use?
Yeah, it was
.AIFF.
Oh, I can't even remember what the form was back then. I can't remember. So Apple basically said... No, we're a computer company, not a music company, not interested in music with the old Apple II series prior to 1984. But in 1984, of course, the Macintosh did music, and so their first sound was named So Sue Me directly back at Apple Recordings. And so they've settled out of court since.
So Sue Me. I like that. That's very good. There's nothing worse than the cacophony of operating systems starting when you walk into the office in the morning. You get these funny sounds of Windows versus Mac ka-chunks and Windows sounds. It's like it's almost worth coming at 9:30 so you can avoid that in the office.
So Sumi was S-O-S-U-M-I or something. Yeah, trying to be clever.
The man who designed Woolworth's logo, Hans Holbusch, said that Apple was taking trademark protection to the extreme. Based on this logic, they would have to take action on every fruit seller. There you go.
That's every fruit seller that decided to tick the box.
Yeah. Now, if you haven't found the
goods.
If you haven't found the logos, oh sorry, yeah, push this up. Is that what? You're... Thanks.
Sorry,
what was that? Came off a PC.
That's the power PC startup.
See, I'll let Graham plug his laptop into the mixer
and look what happens.
Look what's happening. Oh dear. Yes. Where was I? I was distracted by that ka-chunk. Oh yeah, so sue me and trademark lawyers. Yeah, okay, good. There you go. Have a look on the Tech Talk Radio website. You'll see the icons, the pictures there. They're side by side. You can have a bit of a look. On that note, I think it's time for a break. We'll come back with something more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Tell us about your new toy. This
just
is
the one that occupies
the
room.
This is gadget of the year, this one.
I just want to click an Xe and have this work.
So you've got to work around for the Android market now for your Android.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes.
The only option is to buy it outright then.
It is, it really is.
Have you unplugged all the fax machines? Yeah, go on.
I tell you though, that you've got to be careful doing that. Some people get very narky.
Internet villain of the year.
And the moral of the story is backup.
Backups, for goodness sake. This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Let's stay a bit off topic because we can't, or sure, not off topic, but off rundown. My new ADSL 2 Plus service got connected home the other day. Did you know? I'm voice over IP and Telstra-less.
Fair enough. What speeds are you getting?
I don't know. I haven't plugged it in yet.
You haven't plugged it in yet?
If you see my tweet pic, you'll know why.
If you want an explanation as to why Andrew hasn't plugged it in yet, have a look at his tweet pic picture.
Yeah, go to the Tech Talk Radio tweet feed and just click the tweet pic link and you'll see why I haven't plugged it in yet.
Oh. Scott did a sterling job with the installation.
Wasn't bad, was it? He rang me 3 times to tell me he wasn't getting under the house, and now I know why.
Scott from Telstra.
Yeah, correct.
I gave you that telephone socket earlier in the night.
You did, thanks.
Install it yourself
now. With $150, if I may say so myself. Mm. Now, you've gone on iNet too, haven't you, Dr. Ronnie?
I have. I'm churning.
Churning? Absolutely.
Yep. The application's in. It should be in within the next few days, it'd be like.
Now, just before everyone says, you're plugging iNet. No, we're not. But it's the only other ISP we've got on our exchange that we can choose from, apart from the incumbent.
I can speak for myself. Exactly. The reason why I have waited for iinet is that their backbone is not relied on Telstra. They're not a Telstra reseller. They have their own network there.
Yeah.
And that's why I've waited for iiNet to become available in my telephone exchange, which just so happens to be the same telephone exchange that Andrew shares.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks. Anyway, just thought I'd share that with you. In other interesting news to be shared with this week, I had a bit of a laugh today. Victoria Police have made the news because they're telling walkers to turn off their iPods. You know, there's a lot of people being scraped off the footpath and the roads with little white things in their ears at the moment.
Now, did you know in Europe, I think it's the EU or one of the countries there, I can't recall, I'm going off memory here, which is always a bad thing, they've actually regulated that MP3 players, including iPods, have to have a maximum volume now.
Well, that's probably good for the kids too, because they all get deaf.
That's right.
Is that why? Not for health and safety reasons when crossing the road?
Well, health and safety in more than one way. Yeah, that's right.
yeah, I just find that amazing. But the article that I read here, which came out of Australian IT, said that pedestrian deaths, this is a bit like the road toll, really, isn't it? Pedestrian deaths jumped from 41 in 2007 to 59 last year. These are iPod-related deaths.
So I was going to say, are they iPod-related deaths or are they
Yeah, these are iPod-related deaths on Victorian roads.
Yeah, well, it's nearly 50%. It's pretty alarming jump, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe the Victorian government who should legislate that people can't have to take their earplugs out when they walk across the road.
Yeah, perhaps people should just look where they're going.
Well, that too. But I did a survey.
They're too busy watching their GPS, Graham.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Trying to wind him up. I just give him a bit of air time there in case. No, but anyway, I did a brief survey whilst driving to work along one of Melbourne's popular tram tracks the other day. And whilst the schoolgirls and boys were all sitting in their in the tram shelters and the bus stops, not one of them didn't have something in their ears. They all had little white curly cords coming out of their ears and stuff like that. So I don't know what they listened to.
I bet some of them were actually capable of watching where they were going and, you know, not wandering into traffic aimlessly while they're listening to their iPods. I think some of them were possibly actually capable of taking some responsibility for their own safety.
Yes, one would hope.
If only everybody could.
City Traffic Inspector Greg Parr said it was a worrying trend. He went on to say it's no surprise to police that more and more people, especially school students, owning MP3 players, and lots of people walking and sending text messages. Now, I reckon that's got to be a problem. How many people are walking on a power pole sending a text message or into the person in front of them or down the escalators at a railway station?
Natural selection at work.
It is, and there's a reason why they make it illegal to do it in a car too, just quietly.
There is. So are we going to see a gadget that's a motion detector proximity thing so that when you're walking along with your iPod, it tells you when there's a car approaching?
I don't know. I got a funny text from Dr. Ron tonight saying, can you send me a test text? He said, wait till later on in the show.
A text.
I got the same request.
Did you?
Yeah, I sent him a text message back saying I refuse to send pointless texts.
He did. I received it. I've got a really, really good website later in the program.
Whoa.
And it'll be explained. It'll become clear as to why I needed test texts.
Fantastic. All right. So if you know Dr. Ron's phone number, send him a test text and see what happens.
No, please don't.
All right. Adam Turner is a regular on Tech Talk Radio. He has a view from the couch. Last week, we spoke about Google's new gadget, if you want to call it that, which is available from the Google search bar, called SideWiki. Remember? Where you can leave a little comment about a web page.
We had quite a heated discussion, too, in the studio about the merits.
Yeah, I think there's some people on the panel here who don't understand the nature of the internet just widely, but...
And I think someone felt a little left out, and here he is, okay?
Is it a good idea to let people comment on every page on the web? The new Google SideWiki project is part of the Google toolbar installed by millions of web users as a plugin for Firefox or Internet Explorer. When they enable SideWiki, they'll see a new window open up alongside every website they visit. In that window, they'll be able to write comments which all other SideWiki users can see. Whether or not you think SideWiki is a good idea depends on how much faith you have in your fellow netizens. It's obviously a powerful tool that lets people add valuable information to websites, and Google is spruiking it as a way to help and learn from others as you browse the web. Of course, SideWiki is also open to abuse, as is any other comment system. Take a look through a few blogs and see what percentage of comments are actually constructive and helpful, especially when the subject matter is controversial. It's clear that anonymity encourages some people to shoot their mouths off, so the fact that SideWiki requires you to log in with your Gmail account might curb some people's enthusiasm for leaving abusive comments.
or it might just encourage them to use a separate Gmail account when they want to flame someone. Comment systems are designed to open up a two-way conversation with readers. I don't have a problem with that, but some people use the comment system more as a soapbox for spewing forth bias and hatred. That's where the moderator comes in, someone who can pass judgment on what is and isn't appropriate for a particular site. Now, Google SideWiki is a deceptive name in that you can't actually edit other people's comments on a page. So who is moderating the comments on SideWiki? It seems this task has been left to algorithms and mob rule. According to Google, instead of displaying the most recent entries first, we rank SideWiki entries using an algorithm that promotes the most useful, high-quality entries. It takes into account feedback from you and other users, previous entries made by the same author, and many other signals we developed. Such a system should do a good job of filtering out basic spam, spoofing discount pharmaceuticals, for example, but it's unlikely to detect defamatory comments, racist rants, disgruntled employees, and online competitors attempting to slander your name or poach your customers. In a perfect world, SideWiki would build up a wealth of information attached to every website, almost like a distributed version of Wikipedia. Unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect world. You can be sure that SideWiki will be plagued with advertising, spam, scams, and hatred. It seems the actual owner of the web page has no control over SideWiki, but I'm sure this will change. Just wait until someone leaves defamatory comments on a major website and the arguments start about who actually published the comment. Just wait until inappropriate comments appear on Holocaust Memorial websites. The media will pounce on such things and you'll see a major backlash against SideWiki. Just as with the Google book scanning issue, people will start asking, why does Google assume that it has the right to do whatever it wants with everyone's content on the web? I say it's only a matter of days, if not weeks, before SideWiki blows up in Google's face and the search engine giant is forced to introduce tighter safeguards, such as the editing restrictions that were introduced on some Wikipedia pages. A smarter option would have been to introduce an opt-out system from day one, so website administrators could easily exempt their sites from SideWiki. The easiest way to do this would be to create a No SideWiki tab that people could add to the HTML code behind their website, disabling SideWiki on the page. I expect Google will introduce such an opt-out system very soon, if not an opt-in SideWiki tag. In a utopian online world, SideWiki seems like the obvious extension of the web. But in real life, I'm not sure it's such a good idea.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That's what you said last week, wasn't it,
that Dr. was Ron? My suggestion, like, that Adam had there, have, like in the robots.txt file, for example, yeah, which the web browsers use when they're crawling a website, say that you don't want your website to participate in this program. I understand that Graham thinks that you're being a bit precious not wanting people to comment about websites on the web.
Yeah, it's not as if they're putting the comment on your page. It's just on another page and Google are displaying the two pages side by side.
I understand, Graham, but the problem that I have with it is that when you see those comments beside a Google search result, it links the comment in some way, gives some credibility to the comment as if it's being represented by Google, and it's prone to abuse, and I don't think that it's appropriate. If you don't want it to be there, you should have the option to not have those comments put there in search results. Search results are supposed to be objective and clean results from Google, which crawls the web. You don't want people's opinions for the actual search results to appear beside the search results. You don't agree?
I'm afraid I still don't agree with that, no. But I haven't seen the thing in action. I'm very keen to see the thing in action, actually, to find out how it actually works. My understanding was that it didn't appear on the search results. It appeared on the page once you went to it.
My understanding was it appeared beside the search results.
Look at me, I haven't looked at
so
it yet.
So when you saw the search results, if we search for Technology Radio Show, you can see all of the search results there, and you'll be able to see annotations for those search results.
My understanding was that once you went to the page, that it would display alongside the actual page.
Yeah, a bit like if you did a language translation on your page, it'd be an interpretation of your page,
with the comments alongside. That's how I presumed it would look. I suppose we haven't seen it, and we probably should reserve comment until we see it, but I'm still a bit sceptical myself.
And I can see where it could be prone to abuse, and I can see where there might be objectionable comments there, but I see that as being Google's problem to control the content of their of what's effectively a Google-hosted page that talks about your page. It's not a problem for you and your page.
Depends how relevant those comments are, really, doesn't it? Now, I think algorithms aside, at the end of the day, if you're searching for blue widgets in Sydney or wherever, and you get all this rubbish come up on Google, what's the chances are you might try a different search engine?
You don't have to have it there. You can just turn off SideWiki and not display the rubbish down the sides.
But everybody else...
You can, but everybody else who opts in will see the comments. And if you don't want the comments to be associated with your search result,
then
you've got no say over the matter. Google's going to do it anyway.
Then don't have a web page.
Don't put your content on the web page if you don't want people to comment about it. That's what the web is.
I don't have a problem with people commenting on my content. What I do have a problem with is those comments being associated with a search engine search result and having a direct link there with Google. So Google are representing themselves as delivering these comments about your page.
That's right. Google are commenting on your page and you're supplying your page. And all Google are doing is putting the two side by side.
I don't think that's what people expect Google's function is. I think people expect Google to be a search engine to serve up objective results for when you type in keywords into a search field and click the search button. I don't think that people would want all these sorts of comments to be displayed beside what is supposed to be an objective search result. If you then search for Tech Talk Radio or whatever in Google and there are search results where it says Graham's blog, Tech Talk Radio is crap, don't listen to these guys. That's fine, no problem. It's crawled the web and it's found those keywords, yep, and it's ranked that accordingly based on Google's perception of the credibility of your website, and it's ranked it accordingly. But I don't like the idea of having annotations beside search results.
No, it's not putting it beside the search results. Right. It's definitely putting it beside the page. So you go to the Tech Talk Radio site,
yep,
and you can see that.
Yeah, a bigger part. I understand.
And alongside the Tech Talk Radio page will be the side wiki with people's comments on the Tech Talk Radio page.
Understand? Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
They're not adding anything to your page. They're just displaying it in their page beside yours.
But if you don't want those comments displayed in the search wiki,
then you turn them off.
Maybe some.
You're missing the point. You turn it off for you, but you can't. I don't want Google to display any comments at all. If somebody has SideWiki enabled and they go to my website, at the moment there's no facility for me to disable those comments.
But you as a web designer can't control everything about how people look at your pages. If someone wants to display it with another page beside it, that's their choice.
Oh. Yes, it is. But Google are now actually providing that service.
Yeah.
So if you decide you want to go and Google Tech Talk Radio and you Tech Talk Radio... rubbish, errors, etc., to find some not-so-balanced comments about the website, you can do that, and you find a web page. But what Google are doing is offering a service for the whole community to line up comments about your page.
Yep.
And
any
as
page.
Adam's...
Or any pages. Page, any page, for that matter.
And as Adam's just said, that then leaves the door open for people to put whatever they want there.
Yes.
It's got nothing to do with your page.
And that's Google's problem, not yours.
Well, it is mine, because when people have got this enabled, they're going to see it alongside my page. That's what I'm getting at.
I'm sorry. When you publish information on the internet, the danger is that somebody will see it and comment on it and might display,
And that's fine if they've done that on their page that's not associated with my page.
And not associated with Google.
It's like in the old days where people tried to stop people linking to you. You know, don't link to me. I don't want you linking to me because I don't agree with you. You can't stop that on the internet.
No, you can't. And I'd agree with that. But here what we've got is one enormous player with a huge commercial advantage, whether they say they're commercial or not, providing a service that's actually going to change the way people view your web pages. They'll now view your web page and have access to idiot comments alongside it.
That's right.
I would like to think that they were positive, constructive comments, but
the reality is, they may well be either.
The internet is not actually like that.
No, that's Google's problem.
Can I just take this one step further? Are we starting to see here in search engine terms the fact that they're running out of ideas? Is this something where, like, everyone can type in words and have a result returned, and you need to click on it and goes to a page or a site. Is this what we're seeing? Are we starting to see that? Oh, what are we going to do now? Is this what Google's up to here?
Well, it's all. I mean, I guess they're looking at social commentary, and I guess it comes down to what we were talking about earlier about Hey Hey and Twitter. There's obviously a lot of people want to comment about the show.
There's competition out there, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. My personal opinion
maybe
is that
it's not for a search engine to do that. I wouldn't have thought a search engine is by name by nature.
Well, yeah, this is the same argument I've got with Nero about their, you know, they've got their basics of their product right, and now they're adding extra things to it. My personal feeling is that this side wiki thing hasn't got many legs, that not many people are going to bother with it.
I'm inclined to agree with you.
It's a way of Google trying to keep their toolbar alive by adding more features to it, because nobody uses the Google toolbar anymore. You don't need it.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that comment, yep.
And however, when we move to Chrome operating system and Chrome web page, I wonder whether you can actually turn it off.
Well, you certainly don't need the Google toolbar when you're using the Chrome web browser, because all the functionality that you needed from the Google toolbar in the old days is built into the web browser. They might build SideWiki into the web browser, you don't know.
I presume they will.
Andy in the chat room wants us to take our shirts off and start throwing punches here.
Andy, settle.
Wants
settle.
To fight to the death, he
Andy,
says.
The microphone cables don't go outside here. They're not that long.
I very rarely punch up my colleagues on the panel.
Hey, I'm going to change the subject completely here. Let's talk about Apple whilst we've got the fisticuffs up. Apple is primed to launch and revamp iMac in the coming weeks, and the latest reports suggest a quad-core processor might find its way into the slim aluminium chassis. Rumours of a new iMac don't appear to enjoy quite the same level of excitement as the scuttlebutt surrounding the new iPods, MacBooks, and, of course, the iPhone. But when Apple was gearing up for its latest major product launch of the year, and with that launch tip to be just a few weeks away, what's going on, JD? Are we getting excited for the right reasons here? Or?
There's been a lot of comments and rumours, and there always is around Apple. And
speculation's
and product,
rife, isn't
product
it?
Product releases. So the tablet was the new iPhone rumour, and the current discussion is around MacBook updates and iMac updates, and there's a couple of websites in Europe, I think it was, that have released pricing and specifications for the new machines that are yet to be released.
Well, they're talking about an entry-level MacBook and an ultra-thin iMac, which could drop from $1,049 to $899. I don't know whether that's US or Australian or what.
Yeah, and a Mac Mini. Someone, Warlock's actually saying on the chat that he wants a Mac Mini for $499. Well, apparently that's what Europe are going to get it at.
eBay, Warlock?
No, not for that much.
No?
No, not for that much at all. Unless you want a really old one. So the speculation about the new product range has been out for a little while. They're saying that the product range hasn't been updated for 6 months and it's due for an overhaul before Christmas. And that's all true. That's how Apple normally operate. And with the release of the i5 quad-core processors, there's some speculation that at least a high-end iMac might come with that. So if you look at iMac history and recent history, they've tended to have higher, faster processors in the top end, so the 24-inch iMac, for example, and you could buy a bargain basement 17-inch, now the 20-inch iMac with a slower processor. So most people are saying if they do introduce the i5 core machine, that there'll be an option to have the 4-core high-end machine and the standard Core 2 Duo at the low end, and that's probably where the good money would be.
The i5 and the i7 chips are fairly new on the market. They're Intel devices, obviously. I must admit, I'm thinking of getting something like that for a new machine fairly shortly and giving it a run for its money with the new high-speed RAM, the DDR3 RAM, which could be quite good. Good graphics card. Should last you for a while. Gee, how would Windows 7 boot off an SSD on that? That'd be pretty blindingly fast. I wouldn't have thought. Graham, is he looking on the other side of the room?
Maybe.
Now, speaking of Microsoft too, whilst we're going through the rings of all the top companies, Microsoft decided to give away free antivirus, anti-malware, anti-this, anti-that software during the course of the week. What do you reckon? Have you had a look yet, Graham, being the purveyor of such goods and services?
I haven't looked at it in detail, and look, I'm a very happy Kaspersky antivirus user, and I'm just not convinced that I want Microsoft looking after that function on my computer for me.
With a patch every Tuesday.
Well, yeah, that's the point, isn't it? You'd want to be updated daily like some of the big antivirus companies.
I'm sure the definitions are updated daily and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I'm not sure that that's what Microsoft do best.
No, I don't think they're quite sure what they do best yet. I think their operating systems have come of age. Mate, in this latest
web browsers.
Settle.
Yeah, well, they certainly don't do that best.
They buy other products and repackage them best.
Yeah, they do that very well, yep. And they've certainly come up with a good operating system with Windows 7, but yeah, I don't know that I'm quite ready to move to Microsoft antivirus. I think I'll be sticking with my Kaspersky antivirus.
Well, I think you're right there, Graham. Microsoft is hoping that this new product suite will be used by people who haven't previously had security on their PC. So, you know, you build your new PC. What am I going to do? Oh, this is a free one at Microsoft. That'll do.
Yep.
So, and that's the market that they're looking at.
So this
at.
Is your choice, AVG free or Microsoft.
Mm.
Is it available in Australia?
Yes.
They did try this once before.
I did actually click the link the other night and it downloaded.
Oh, right. They have released this sort of software in the past with, I think it was Live OneCare or something like that.
Oh, yes.
And but it wasn't available in Australia. It was only available in the US and possibly one or two other markets.
There you go. It was this PC that I clicked it on, and there it is. It's called Security Essentials. And it's living beautifully with Kaspersky.
They're running side by side, are they?
At the moment. Yeah, inadvertently. I didn't realise that I'd put it on that machine, but there you go. It's the laptop I've got here in the studio. So, yes, you can download it. Real-time protection is on, and virus and spyware definitions are up to date. That's all I can tell you.
And to answer the people in the chat, no, we don't have shares in Kaspersky. We just happen to like the product, so... Yeah. Sorry about that.
Are they still at us about that?
Otherwise, we'd have little Kaspersky badges on our jumpers like the footballers do.
That's right. Now, Eugene, we've spoken to Eugene on the show.
Mm. We have.
He's a good bloke, Mr. Eugene. I'd love to have a beer with him down the track in Moscow somewhere.
Yes, I bet he's got some interesting stories.
War stories and a half. Mm.
Yeah. He'd have a vodka with you, I think, not a beer.
Yeah, he wouldn't use a credit card either.
No.
Anyway, so the other thing too with the Microsoft Security Essentials, if you're running a non-legitimate version, it won't install. They're only letting legitimate Windows users download the free software. But
yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. And I think these days that we all should be discouraging people who are using non-legitimate versions of the operating system because they won't be getting the security updates and therefore they'll be very vulnerable to being taken over by... bad guy software and becoming the source of all the spam that we hate so much.
In another interesting story that came out this week, researchers at a US online security company have uncovered information on a next-generation banking Trojan. These are the things you speak of, Graham. Mm. And this Trojan steals money from a victim's account while they're logged in. Over 22 days in August, the Trojan's operator stole nearly $438,000 from several hundred accounts with an unnamed German bank. So they're trying it already. The Trojan is able to calculate on the fly how much money is available in the account, how much the balance is to steal. What do you reckon?
So this is the...
This would have to be targeted to a particular bank to work with their particular website, would it?
And their client, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is stories of bank heists of old where...
This is middleman stuff. This is not end user, Bizzo. This is why you're transacting with the bank.
Yes, that's right. So they've got on to the bank's server connection and found your keys and then just transferred money from your account to their account whilst you're on, as opposed to stealing your password.
Yeah. Well, it apparently it calculates a maximum, a maximum and a minimum left that will not trigger anti-fraud systems and decides on a percentage of the cash to leave in the account. It then displays a fake balance to the bank has logged into their accounts. So it's obviously doing a both ways hijack. It then displays obviously the fake account, and apparently the Trojan is set to sending requests to the bank and getting replies that your browser doesn't display. So there you go. About 6,400 of 90,000 computers that visited sites housing the malware were infected. So, and that's coming to us on CNET, and people like that are telling us about those at the moment. So maybe that's the new threat that we've got coming up, this middle Trojan sort of stuff. So just, even these days, make sure you've got good antivirus software, anti-malware software. That's what it all comes down to, doesn't it? So, and try the Microsoft one. If anyone gives it a whirl, let us know what it's like, and we'll talk about it on the radio. Let's talk internet just briefly because where does the time go?
We're up to item three now, I think.
Item three. I'm going to give up on rundowns. The competition watchdog has extended a warning to all telcos and ISPs in Australia over the use of misleading advertising to promote mobile and wireless internet speeds.
Only now.
About time is all I can say. Only now. The ACCC chairman, Graham Samuel, said the practice of quoting maximum, up to, or peak network speeds in advertisements had to stop if those speeds are not generally achievable or likely to be achieved by consumers using the network.
Oh, they are if you're in a laboratory, in a vacuum, with no other users.
And correct, but that's not the average general user sitting here in a radio studio with a laptop trying to connect to Next G. What's the speed you're going to get?
Oh, isn't it?
Maybe they should quote averages.
Not even close. Maybe they should.
Were you disappointed, Graham, with Next G when you didn't get 20 megabits per second to your mobile phone?
You mean 2040, isn't it now?
Yeah, whatever it is, 42 megabits per second, up to, with a little asterisk.
No, I think I might have been a bit realistic about it and realised that was never going to happen.
And the fine print that says actual performance may vary for this user.
I think this is a legacy of disgruntled Optus users, I reckon. Poor people that are on the Optus broadband network.
I think they've all the carriers have been doing it. They tend to quote the maximum speed, and no one ever achieves anything near it.
Far be it for me to defend the telcos, because I don't really want to.
All right, well then don't.
But how do you? I wonder how you actually do give a fair representation. So later in the year, some of us will probably trek off to Flemington for the Melbourne Cup Carnival.
Oh yeah, then the cows come out,
and you'll get absolutely no Next G coverage for a period of time.
No, they bring in a cow, a cell on wheels.
No, they did that, and it still had absolutely no mobile coverage.
If only Mark was here.
You send out 50 people with 50 notebooks to random places, do a download, time the download, use the average speed, and away you go.
Yeah, good.
On a normal day, not on Melbourne Cup Day or anything silly like that. Just on a normal day. How hard is that?
I think, and don't quote me on this, I think when Mark was here, he used to say that there was a fixed bandwidth allocation per cellular tower, and that was obviously distributed evenly amongst users. So it doesn't take much to do the math there, does it?
Even in the real world, if you're the only customer on the tower, there's still, just because of radio, the behaviour of the radio, it's not in a laboratory situation, you never get the full speed, if you are the only one.
I can get really good speed on my Next G modem, wireless modem, at about 3 a.m.
Can you?
Yeah, it goes really fast then.
Because you're probably the only person connected to the cell.
But do you get the maximum speed? Do you get the 7.2 megabits? Or
I've only got a 3.5 meg card, so I only get 3.5 meg.
But do you get 3.5 meg?
Oh, whatever it comes down to. It's very close. It flies.
That's pretty good, though. 3.5 meg.
If you do get 3.5 meg on your 3.5 meg card, then that's remarkable.
Yeah, it's not quite that.
Because no one ever does. Good. Yeah.
Anyway, so there you go. That's Graham Samuel talking about getting these telcos in line.
Yep.
He also reminded telcos that under the Trade Practices Act, companies must not make representations that were misleading or deceptive or likely to mislead or deceive, which is pretty much the same thing, I would have thought. the latest warning comes after Telstra, Optus, Vodafone, Hutchison Australia provided the ACCC with court-enforceable undertakings on the issue. What's that mean? What's a court-enforceable undertaking?
It means if they don't do it, that the judge will slap them over the wrist with a wet tram ticket.
Yeah, and give them a fine of $3.50, which
exactly
I think...
Right.
Who said it the other day? We were talking about ACCC fines. I think it was Adam. We're saying that that's during the hour that we're on the radio, 2 hours that we're on the radio, that Telstra would make all that back and more.
Yep.
So, there you go. Get your undertakings here.
The fine that Telstra was awarded would take them as long as it took Dr. Ron to read the news to make
like
that up.
That's right. Yep. Telstra is going to, they're having another go at payphones too, specifically in Melbourne, which I'm sure is also going to happen around the country. They've drawn up a hit list of payphones that it's going to scrap. Do we need payphones these days? I guess we do outside of certain venues, but do they need to be as densely populated as we currently have, considering the proliferation of mobile phones?
I think people like the idea that there's still the odd payphone around. I think there's people like that security of thinking that, if drop my cell phone in a puddle or whatever it might happen to be, that, you can go and drop like 40 cents in a slot.
And it's like Pooh Girl did. She dropped it down the S-bend of the toilet in the on-spot the other day. Remember that?
Yeah, see, she could have...
But that's got to be one in a million chance, that.
She wasn't going to find a payphone at the bottom of that toilet.
No.
She's going to find a lot of other nasty things, but not a payphone.
Had I been her, I wouldn't have wanted that phone back.
No. They're cheap these days. So, but anyway...
You have to ask where the payphones are and... What the usage is, what the community reliance on them. If you've got a dozen payphones at the corner of Flinders Street and Swanson Street in the city, or in in Pitt Street or wherever, then maybe you could halve that number. But if you're talking about somewhere in the bush where people don't have mobile phone coverage, they might rely heavily on the payphone being there.
I think you're probably right there. They will, according to the press release there too, that Telstra is going to put a, you know, a watch this space sticker on that particular phone. So if you want to, you know, lodge a protest and make stay there, you'll get a chance. So keep out, keep an eye out for a sticker on a phone.
I'm sure from Telstra's point of view that they don't make any money anymore, that they don't get nearly the amount of use they used to get. But I think the public, from a service point of view, still expects there to be a payphone, you know, within striking distance.
Mm. Mm. Did we talk about last week Telstra killing off the Trading Post, by the way? Because they did.
Telstra killed it, did they?
Yeah, they owned it.
Oh, okay.
They bought it off. This is the Melbourne Trading Post, and I think there's other flavours in other states.
No more Trading Post.
But no more paper Trading Post, anyway.
Okay, it's going to be a website only, is it?
Yeah, its last edition was going to be published on October the 29th, which is coming up. It's got a month to run, less than a month to run now. So
you can't circle something on the Trading Post on the kitchen table and say, tell them they're dreaming?
You'd have to print it out first and then circle it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I must admit, I haven't used the Trading Post for a long time. eBay seems to be their problem. Exactly. eBay seems to be the auction house of choice these days. So, anyway. All right, the other interesting news this week is banks are providing, or one bank in particular, is going to provide... No, it's not them, actually.
No?
It's going to provide free Wi-Fi access. Now, who would have thought a bank would give something away? Well, there's got to be a catch.
What's the catch?
Yeah, exactly. The ANZ Bank has partnered with Cafe Screen to offer free Wi-Fi at 100 cafes and train stations and ferries until the end of January. And guess what? They're going to be advertising their new online banking site. So guess what's going to pop up as you try and log in to use free wireless internet?
Free Wi-Fi if you put up with our ads.
Yeah, we're going to tell you.
I'll use my mobile broadband, thanks.
Yeah. In October, the bank will offer Wi-Fi access at apparently 46 cafes in Melbourne, 46 in Sydney, and 10 in Brisbane. And in November, it will offer Wi-Fi access at Southern Cross Station in Melbourne during the Spring Carnival, in which 500,000 consumers are expected to pass through the turnstiles. So, anyway, I guess it's just purely advertising for those guys, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm with Graham. I'll just pay for my ad-free mobile broadband.
Yep.
Yeah, all right, there you go. ICANN, the people that control the names and numbers on the internet, have basically decided to relinquish a bit of their control too. So, traditionally, an American-based company with American interests in heart, they're going to let go of the chains a little bit and allow others to come in and make decisions or rule their own domain name space too. So maybe times are changing over there. And other interesting news this week, IBM, they're going to have another go. They're going to play clouds too. We're going to have too many clouds. We're going to have a rainstorm, floods, hail, tempests, and there's too many clouds out there.
Clouds are going to crash into each other.
Yeah. Well, IBM's going to have a go this time. Introducing an inexpensive web-based corporate email services. Yes, another one. Obviously, it's going to compete with Google, and IBM are going to have a go to capitalize on the damage that's been caused by outages by Google apps over the past year. Have they had lots of outages? I've heard of a few.
IBM or Google?
Google.
Yeah, here and there, but nothing to write home about, really.
I guess it all comes down to how big the outage is, depends upon what mission-critical thing you were doing at the time.
Yeah, they had, Gmail was unavailable for a few hours, a month or so ago, and they have the odd outage here and there.
Well, this lightweight email service is going to cost US $36 a month, 25% less than what Google charges for the same period.
$36 a month for email?
It's a lot.
Why would you bother?
Set up your own Exchange server or even still one of your own free servers. Isn't there plenty of them out there?
Or don't use email.
Well, have you tried Wave yet? Did you get your invite?
No, I haven't yet. I want Wave. I hope it's going to be an email killer.
When's that coming out? Pretty shortly, I would hope.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hopefully if someone out there did get an invite from Google Wave, let us know. I think we all signed up and the odd chance that we might have got one, but we didn't.
We're each one of probably millions of people that applied.
Absolutely. Mm. All right, we'll take a break. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Before we get to the rundown this week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, yeah,
it'll help keep you warm on a cold Melbourne night.
Now, they've actually been pulled off US telly.
So chances are it may be a nice marriage of technology and provider.
I'm fed up with this you're not living in the right country stuff on the internet. That's not the way the internet works.
Oh, well, you will work for the government. Yeah.
I'd be hoping they'd be refunding that pretty quick,
we're
smart.
We're in 3 meg hell, buddy.
I'm on 8 meg. 16 or 17 megabits per second.
Suck it up, princess.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
Okay, can those people stop texting Dr. Ron now, please?
Stop texting me. I've got lots of test texts.
Yes. Oh, there you got to laugh. See, there are people out there that know who you are.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you, Kayla. Whoever it is that's sending me all these text messages through, that's terrific. Yes.
Hey, an interesting thing that I came across during the week. Have you heard of a website called Tropico?
No.
No.
Sorry, not Tropico. Tropico with a D.
No, still no.
No? Okay.
Still no.
I thought about time someone came up with this. I haven't been there and haven't tried it. I'm just telling you what I'm reading on the piece of paper that's in front of me. But it's Dropico is a brand new service that allows you to drag and drop pictures from multiple social networks rapidly and seamlessly without the need to upload photos to or imagery to other sites.
I did hear about this.
Oh, so this is to steal other people's photos.
Correct.
Okay.
It means that you can go to my web. You can go to TwitPic and drag and drop this TwitPic.
Is this a good thing?
I don't know. It's certainly going to create a lot more media online because somehow something's going to have to transfer
it
somehow.
Lots of copies of what's already online.
Well, that too, really, isn't it? So, but have a try, see what it's like. So it says have any picture stored on your TwitPic account that you want to share with your Facebook friends, or you want to bring a couple of your Flickr shots to your MySpace account. Just log on to Dropico, log into the services that you use, and start dragging and dropping. That might be a clue, actually. Maybe you can only do it with services that you own. So you can move it around quite easily with the services thanks to this website. So
yeah, but this struck me as being a bit dumb because you just you're duplicating content across like different networks.
Wouldn't be the first time there's something a bit dumb on the internet.
You're right.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly.
But so look, I've got all these photos in Flickr, then now I'll just drag and drop them to Facebook and to Twitter and to Picasa or Bebo or whatever, and now look, you can look at them here and here and here and here.
Yeah.
And instead of having a 1 meg footprint on the intertubes, now I've got a 28 meg footprint for the same content.
Well, maybe it could just suck it in with a URL or something like that. That'd be that'd be logical and too much thinking, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, if you're using it or you've tried it out, let us know.
Well,
how it goes.
It's still in beta, so who knows what might happen. There's a couple of you might be lucky enough to have an access to it. A bit like Google Wave at the moment. All these new things to come out and annoy us with. Well, Dropico. Yeah, anyway. The British High Court, you know them, the people who make rules over there, they have used Twitter for the very first time to issue an injunction. An injunction is, from my understanding, is a piece of paper that says, stop it, you can't do that anymore, unless I stand corrected. But Britain's High Court has ordered an injunction to be served through the social networking site.
Well, it's a court order. Normally, this would have to be served personally on somebody. So somebody would have to walk up to them and say, there's your piece of paper from the court. You've been served.
Are you Dr. Ron?
Yeah, and I'd say, yes.
Would you like to be served?
Oh,
consider yourself served.
Thank you very much.
Well, there you go. Don't they get $5 afterwards and a tram ticket?
is this serving something to a virtual person in virtual space? Or?
Well, last week's ruling, the court said issuing the writ over the microblogging site was the best way to get an anonymous tweeter who was impersonating a right-wing commentator to stop it. So they couldn't find him,
so
obviously.
So they don't know who he is to send it to him in person.
Well, the Twitter account, which was called Blarney Barnsey, was impersonating Donald Blarney, a lawyer and conservative blogger. The account, which was opened last month, featured a photograph of Mr. Blarney, followed by a number of messages purporting to be by him. And the court said that the unknown imposter should stop their activities and that they should reveal themselves to the court. Got two chances now, guys.
Mm.
The owner of the fake account will receive the writ next time they enter the site.
Mm.
There you go. That's an interesting method of delivery, I would have thought. Why wouldn't they go and just sort of get the details and knock on that person's door and say, will you stop it, please? Well, look at how many imposters there are out there. Look at the fake Stephen Conroy. Is he still going?
Yes, I think he is.
Yeah? Okay. We'll wait and see what happens. Have you? What other fake Twitter followers does anyone
There's
know?
There's a fake
of?
Steve Jobs. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, what does he talk about?
Well, he predicts Apple's future.
He predicts, unlike the real Steve Jobs.
Accurately.
But is he humorous?
Yes, he is.
Because the real Steve Jobs is actually... Steve Jobs. The real Steve Conroy. What's his name? Sorry.
Senator Conroy.
He can actually be quite humorous at times. And then all of a sudden, he obviously gets a skin full and he goes off... You know, boring.
Pear-shaped.
See you later. So there you go. I thought that was it.
You're talking about the pretend Stephen Conroy, obviously. Not to slice
Sorry, I don't
our,
want to, don't
our
want
honourable
to...
minister, the honourable Stephen Conroy.
It'd be good to have him on the show one night. He's a local boy. See if he wants to pop in, if he's got a spare 5 minutes, so we have a chat with him or something like that. Other interesting things too, which I thought we talked briefly about the other night, digital media in dire straits. I thought, when I read that, I thought, yeah, no, that's pretty right. Who uses digital media these days the way it was intended to be used?
To listen to dire straits music.
Yeah.
Like we just did.
Yeah, like we just did. No, I think video. Yeah, we talked about video on mobile phones last week, if I remember correctly. And I'm just going to take it a little bit further and say, well, online, the only thing which I think is going gangbusters, I think, video-wise, would have to be Ustream, YouTube.
Both of them, probably.
Yeah, and Ustream for the video side of stuff. But what about all the other things? Has anyone got an opinion on whether the other forms of digital media, whether it's served from a government web server or something like that, or are we all going down the one track now, which is YouTube?
No, I think there's... Well, I think in this room we'd find a couple of ABC iView users.
Yep.
I'm one of those. Yeah, so that's good.
So
what about?
No, I don't think it's all YouTube. I think there's the
maybe it's just our country. Maybe it's just Australia because we're blocked to Hulu and things like that. Although Hulu apparently is coming here sometime in the next millennium.
Well, that'd be good. I bet we don't get any content on it though.
You know what you did earlier today with TwitPic, and you uploaded a picture, to the internet from your mobile telephone.
I did.
There's a site called Quik.com, Q-I-K.com. We've had this as a website of the week in the past, I think, and there are more and more of these services emerging every day. This is a not only a video sharing site where you can share video from your phone, you can share live video from your phone, Andrew. You can load an application, you can click broadcast now, like we do with, say, with Ustream.
Yeah.
You can walk around the room here, and it will live broadcast, live stream to Quik.com.
And the point of that is...
Well, we did that from Ustream for a bit of a test a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we did. That's right. Like what we do there with Ustream.
But it's designed from a handheld device.
Yeah, from your mobile phone. You just hit broadcast now, walk along with your mobile phone, say, hey, look what I'm looking at. I'm in the middle of a disaster where there's an earthquake or whatever, and I want to show everybody what it is I'm experiencing.
Right. Is there an issue with live video?
Is that what you really want to see these days?
I don't know. This is what I'm asking. This is the sort of thing where video and media is coming to a head.
This is where the convergence bit becomes difficult in a mobile setting, if that's what you're talking about here, because you'd need to run, for example, Twitter or some other short message client to tell people that, hey, look at what I'm doing now, and refer them to this Quik site, I think it was.
Yep.
And then by the time they get to Quik, then they're probably no longer looking at their Twitter site, so it becomes difficult to manage things in the live space. But certainly to refer people to photos or to web pages in the static space, it's a little bit easier.
Do you think it's difficult to manage things in a live space because there are too many things to watch or keep track of?
If we're talking about a mobile platform, yeah. I think if you're sitting in front of your desktop and you've got multiple screens and all the rest of it, you can do that because you'll have little panels of various things open. But I think for the mobile user, and you know, I use Twitter a lot on my phone. I don't use it so much on my desktop. Just to see what's going on while I'm out and about, because once I'm at home, I can actually, you know, read the mail and the news and my email and so forth.
Yep.
So I think it's the mobile user that's likely to be instant on what's happening right now. And it's very difficult at the moment because no one's got really a great interface to move from Twitter to Quik and back to other things. There's no sort of integrated platform yet. But I think one of the sad bits about digital media in Australia is that we're known in Australia for being one of the countries and one of the communities that takes technology on board very early.
We're early adopters, aren't we?
But for some reason, all the providers decide to give us stuff last. And, you know, Hulu and iTunes and various other providers of commercial spaces, they give everything to their states first, and we tend to get it last, where in fact we'd probably use it more if it was given to us early.
It's interesting. I know that with music in particular, a lot of the reasons why iTunes, I think at the time, was delayed launching in Australia was because of issues with copyright and record companies and movie houses in this country, because they couldn't all come to the agreement and the realisation that the future was arriving. And here it is, guys, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, and this I think is a big part of the problem in Australia, possibly much worse than in other parts of the world, is that the content is all... The rights to use the content in Australia is all tied up in groups that have a vested interest in not promoting new technologies, such as the big TV stations, the big free-to-air TV stations, or the pay TV providers, and they're really trying desperately to hang on to their subscribers or their viewers, and don't want to have people embracing the new media, which is most unfortunate, as you say.
But again, you could commercialise the digital media. You could put ads in it if you really wanted to and still provide it.
I don't know. Can you?
Well, I don't know.
If you put ads in, you're going to, especially to services which have traditionally been free.
Yeah,
try
and people will rebel against that. Just ask Rupert about what's happened in some instances there.
Try watching video on the 9MSN website and see how quickly you get frustrated with the level of advertising that pops up and covers the screen and
And two things start
incredibly intrusive, yeah.
You're trying to watch a video but because you've missed an episode of something and it starts playing and then an ad pops up and that starts playing and you've got two audio streams coming down at the same time. It's completely pointless.
Oh, I didn't mean
it doesn't achieve anything.
If you mimic but that's what they do. That's how careless they are with the way they implement this stuff. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, they need to do it smart. And people are used to traditional television, which, you know, every couple of minutes there'll be a 30-second or 1-minute ad break, whatever it ends up being, depending on the network you're on. People are used to that, so I think people would accept that might happen in the digital age in order to fund it being free and available on the internet. I think people would get that, provided they had some value add. And the value add, you get to watch the program that you want to watch when you want to watch it, rather than according to the digital program guide, which is now often wrong.
I view might be starting, they might have started the revolution, probably unknowingly, where eventually, because the government broadcaster at the moment is not subject to any advertising, you can go there and click and watch and be uninterrupted. But that's going to be few and far between, I think, as time goes by.
Yeah, the good thing about that, though, is it shows the average consumer what can be done with the technology, and they can start asking the questions, well, why, if I miss an episode of Home and Away or All Saints or whatever it is, why can't I just go back and watch it the next day online?
Well, there's no reason why you can't, apart from
the fact that the providers are... Yeah, exactly.
I think Channel 7 sort of embraced it recently too. What was their show that they had on? It wasn't Lost. What was the other one? They put it up straight away for download, pretty much. And I can't think of the name of the program now. But anyway, some of the commercials are actually...
The new one, the Flash Forward?
Oh, I don't know. I refused... Now, don't start me on that. What cheeses me off...
Yeah.
That goddamn watermark they had 2 days before, right across. I couldn't watch anything on Channel 7 because it had the flash forward body watermark down the bottom of the screen. Now, since when has the watermark become an advertising sort of opportunity?
I warned you about watermarks years ago. Remember we had this argument? And I said, I hate watermarks. They are completely pointless. And you have stuff which is rebroadcast from stuff which is rebroadcast. You'll have
a
smudge in that corner, and you'll have a 7 logo in that corner, and a 10 logo in that corner, and another smudge down the bottom of that corner.
Sounds like a comedy sketch.
It is. It's like, what is the point? No one has achieved anything. Well, just don't do it full stop.
The reason why...
If people won't watch the ads, if people are skipping through the ads, then they've got to put the advertisement over the top of the content to make you watch it. It's as simple as that.
I'm watching ABC, and I've got a 7 watermark and a 9 watermark and a smudge and a smudge. It's like, I mean, hello. What is the point?
Well, see, originally the point of the watermark was to protect the rights of the original owner where it was originated from. But
so that if you ripped it and rebroadcast it, then you'd know, well, even people would know who you stole it from.
Even if you ripped it and just bunged it up on a peer-to-peer network, you'd still know where it came from type sort of thing. So, yeah, that was the reason behind it. And it's purely because home video recording became to the level of broadcast video recording. Mm. You know, the difference wasn't that much. So they had to do it somehow, and that's how they chose to do it. But now they removed the Channel 7 logo, and it just turned into whatever that program was called.
Yeah.
And it just sat there, and of course, I kept nudging my wife every 5 minutes, saying, hey, did you know that this program's on? And after I'd done that about 5 or 6 times, she hit me.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
And that's the same reaction that I got with this goddamn watermark on the screen.
Now, I haven't seen this. So the watermark is actually the name of the program that isn't on at the moment, but will be on later. Is that right?
Yeah. 2 days prior to this thing, this last Monday night, it's on now. It's probably why people have probably tuned off us and gone and watched television, is the fact that this program was on, and it said Flash Forward or whatever it was, and 8 o'clock on Monday night or whatever. And it was throughout the whole program of the movie that the kids were trying to watch, and we would watch. It drove me crazy after a while.
I just go to ISO Hunt and download it.
Yeah, someone was saying on our chat tonight that there was a question.
Encourage illegal downloading and file sharing, Graham.
Well, that's
good
what
work.
Channel 7 are doing by behaving that way. Well, that's exactly what they're doing.
In all seriousness, exactly right. Yeah. Because people are going to go, I don't want the ads, I don't want this propaganda and stuff on the screen.
You want to see the series in order, you want to see it now, you don't want to see it in 6 months' time when Channel 7 bother to broadcast it. So, just go and download it. So, much easier.
Are they going to push us over the limit, surely? Is free-to-air
Shortly. They pushed me over the limit about a year ago.
Okay. All right, so is this the demise of free-to-air? Rather than are they going to kill themselves, and are they actually now starting to actually push themselves into a little bundle which will become insignificant down the track, and everyone's going to go online for their content?
This is what they are doing to themselves, yes.
And the sad thing is, that's right, Graham, this is what they are doing to themselves, and the likely end result is going to be that as the number of people watching free-to-air approaches zero,
yep,
there's going to be more and more commercials, more and more advertisements, more and more watermarks, and eventually
more and more channels. So does zero divided across four still equals zero?
This is the problem. This is what's going to happen.
But yep. Whereas if they provided some decent content and provided in a decent way, people would actually go and watch it.
Isn't this where the Foxtel model falls down? People pay for advertisements? Like, really? Because I remember when Foxtel first came out, the movie channels never had ads.
Now, some Foxtel subscribers get very angry about getting ads on their Foxtel that they're paying for.
I haven't had Foxtel for many years. I don't know what it's like at the moment. But yes, to pay to get ads would be...
Oh, the worst thing about ads on Foxtel is it's the same ad every 30 seconds. Every break is the same ad. Oh, God.
It's cheap.
But what does it mean for the... cheap. What does it mean for the production of content, though? If free-to-air media goes down, does this mean we'll be reliant on the cable channels to actually do the production?
Who knows? Mm. I think we'll be reliant on the BBC to provide us with good quality like they've been doing up until now. So we're going to Oddspot Gadget website after this.
Suffering succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
The 43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens.
Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely. No,
really?
If you need high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter.
It automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
By the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was too hard and you drove away.
That's right.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
Latitude's everything to me. Yeah. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day. Or my wife, for that matter. But they're both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget is something that my wife just bought. A Panasonic DMC FT1 Lumix. It's a new ruggedized 12 megapixel digital camera. CNET.com.au says, for a camera that can cope with everything you throw at it, from a pool party to a safari, the FT1 is rather good at its job. Expect excellent quality HD video and great photos if you can look past the slightly slow performance times. It does have a video function, this camera. CNET says, rather than being a token inclusion to increase the specs and up the asking price, the FT1's video taking is so far the best we've seen on a still compact camera. Using a format known as AVCHD Lite, a proprietary format based on AVCHD used in many camcorders. It's been jointly developed by Panasonic and Sony. The FT1 is capable of recording in 720p. It does have an HDMI port on the side of the camera.
It's not HD then.
It's an included software to transcode the resulting video files. User comments, though, seem to say great pics, good battery life, but needs a lens cap. And the camera breaks when it comes into contact with water. That's a bit unfortunate.
Oh, I was going to ask if it went into
it's
water.
It's advertised as being Nokia, able to, go into water, like if you're snorkeling or whatever. The RRP is $659. The price range online anywhere from about $370 up to about $600. But that's our gadget of the week. I'll let you know how it goes, as my wife's just taken it away.
Taken for a swim.
Yeah, for a swim. Panasonic's DMC FT1 Lumix digital camera.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This website, I'm going to hold.
This is what I've been waiting for.
I'm
going
to hold my phone up to the microphone if it starts talking. The website is www.drivesafely. It's drivesafe.ly. Thanks to TARDIS3 for sending us this website. Have a look at drivesafe.ly. There's software there that you can download, which is a text to speech engine. It reads
new text message sender +61419022. Hi, Dr. Ron. Listen to Tech Talk Radio.
There you go. Listen to Tech Talk Radio. That was the text message that Graham just sent me in the studio. If you're driving and you've got the phone in a cradle and you receive a text message, it'll actually read out the message to you, text to speech. I think it's a fantastic.
What does it cost? Anything?
It's free, but you can register and you can pay some money and you can have your choice of voices. It's free for the Android and the BlackBerry platforms, and it's coming soon for the iPhone and Windows Mobile. So have a look at that website there and the applications that are available, drivesafe.ly.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Internet auction site eBay has stopped a 10-year-old girl's attempt to auction off her moaning grandmother online.
What?
Zoe Pemberton from... JD, just tune out for a moment. Zoe Pemberton from Southern England put her 61-year-old grandmother up for sale on the auction with no reserve, describing her as rare and annoying and moaning a lot. But she also said that pensioner Marion Goodall was very cuddly, loved word searches, and enjoyed drinking tea. More than 20 bids were received for Goodall, but she has since been withdrawn from auction. An eBay spokesperson said that while no doubt Mrs. Goodall would have fetched a princely sum, eBay unfortunately does not allow the listing of human beings on its site. Mind you, we were impressed, said the eBay spokesperson, to see a total of 27 bids for the lady in question.
You've left me speechless. There's nothing I could say after that.
Oh, you will put me in charge of these segments. No, thanks, well, Andrew. That's our website, Oddspot Gadget. It's all happened.
Thanks for a great show. It's been a very interesting soapbox-ish sort of show. Everyone's had a... Well, I think we'll definitely have to get the What Cheeses Me Off segment going. I think that could be really good for next week. We'll give that one to Graham.
Another positive of the GPS conversation.
Yeah, exactly. All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Who knows what's going to come up next week? Because we don't. Let us know. Send us an email. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Until the same time next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.